This is The Dugout. Every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey. Inside access to the clubhouse from Shannon Dreher on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
All baseball, all Mariners, 1-2, getting us started here is Brandon Gustafson joining us in studio. Hey, BG, how's it going?
What's up, guys? How we doing?
Well, what we're doing is wondering whether or not the Mariners can actually knock in 6 or more runs in a game this year. Now, I think the answer is yes, and I also predicted it would be tonight.
Oh, man.
What are my odds looking like?
I mean, they've got a guy that's at least going to be in the strike zone with Chris Bassitt, so maybe that can help them a little bit. Maybe not chase quite as much as we've seen this year and a little bit last year. So we'll see. Obviously, based on what we've seen so far this year, not overly optimistic that they're going to put 6 on the board, but that'd definitely be a good sign.
You're a logical person, BG.
I try.
And, you know, we open up the lines. People call it in and tell us, are you tripping? Are you frantic? Are you calm? Where are you at? And we got a little bit of both. And I think that's the way it should be, right? Everyone has different approaches to life. So you being the baseball guy, I don't know. Just BG, man. How are you feeling about this team right now?
I mean, they're not going to pitch as bad as they have the entire year, and they're not going to be probably hitting under 200 for the entire year. I mean, let's just face it, that's not really what that lineup is constructed to be, and their pitching staff is good enough to do much better than what they've done initially. I think the big thing for me just offensively is, I mean, we got to keep pounding the table. Those strikeouts, the whiffs, the chase, the swing and miss, I mean, that stuff has to start regressing, like, in terms of a good way. Those numbers need to go down in order for them to be more successful. They can't just talk the talk and say, oh, you know, we have this new offensive coordinator, we're talking this game plan, we're talking this. I mean, at some point, they've got to go out there 1-9 and just collectively put together some solid at-bats. And unfortunately, last night was another game where Ty France is really the only guy that looks really consistent and sound at the plate. And that's a dude that was coming off of a flight after welcoming the birth of his kid, and he hadn't played in 3 days. So it's a little funky situation with baseball there. But no, they've got enough talent and makings to be better. Am I saying that they're going to be top 10 lineup or anything like that? No, but with the pitching that they have, they need to be just an average lineup, and they're going to be pretty okay.
Do you think, this is a question that I'm stealing a question Bump asked me and listeners earlier in the show, but kind of like where Ty's place in the lineup should be. We've wondered whether him being later in the lineup and having some of that pressure off has been why we've seen some more production. So I can't tell if moving him up is a good spot, but Scott Servais this morning with Brock and Salk pointed to the top of the lineup, the leadoff spot, and then those top three with Rodriguez and Polanco as well, not doing what they need to do. So what do you do there? And as a whole with your lineup, is there a move that you'd want to see made?
Yeah, it's tough because, like, lineup construction isn't always as simple as, hey, let's get the best players up more, right?
You're telling me it's so much more complicated.
I mean, you want
to
mix and match. You want to have guys that protect certain guys' spots. I think that's in particular why you have a guy like Polanco hitting right behind Julio rather than someone like Cal, because Cal and Julio have really similar skill sets, aggressive early in counts, swing and miss, but a ton of power. So you don't really want to pair those guys super close together. So you want to have a little bit of that protection. That being said, Ty is someone that could go up there and string together quality at bats and maybe protect some of those more aggressive guys. But also at the same time, I mean, if this team is going to be what a lot of us thought they were going to be, Polanco and Garver and Haniger, I mean, Haniger's done all right, but Polanco and Garver in particular need to hit like 3-4 guys for this team. And if France is doing what he's doing, hitting 6 or 7 or whatever it is, that's a good luxury, because one of the things that's also been lacking for this team last few years is just length of the lineup. Mm-hmm. So if you can get someone like that hitting pretty well in the 7 hole, that's great. But obviously, if he's one of the few guys that is hitting and this keeps going on for another week, too, at some point, you got to maybe try hitting him 3, 4, 5, something like that. And maybe just try and kickstart this thing a little bit better.
I wouldn't say Castillo's been playing horribly. He's just missed some spots and guys are jumping on it and taking advantage of it. I still got complete confidence in Castillo. I believe him when I hear him speak through his interpreter. The dude is calm. He's solid. What are you seeing out of Castillo, and what do you project going forward for my man?
First off, the interpreter, shout out to Freddie. Freddie's awesome. Freddie with Mariners PR. Freddie's great. It's location, man, because it'd be one thing if we're looking at Castillo and he's sitting 93, 94 and the slider doesn't have the bite and the changeup's not diving down. It's really not that. I mean, it's just you're seeing a guy like that. He has so much movement on it. Rather than these balls starting off the plate and kind of tailing back to the edges, it's it's kind of starting where he wants it to finish, and then it's going back over the plate. And Toronto didn't have the best statistics last year, but just talent-wise, that's a good lineup. That's a good, talented lineup. Big league hitters are going to make you pay when you're missing over the plate. I will say the last two starts, he did better the last two outings. I think getting ahead, working ahead, getting two strikes than he did on opening day. Opening day, he was falling behind everybody. So there's at least that little bit of progress. But overall, yeah, I mean, stuff-wise, you're feeling good about that. At some point, it'll click. And if you just look month by month in his career, April may have always been the worst months of his career. And, like, again, every game matters, but there is some context to it that it's somebody who is more of a slow starter than once it kind of starts to heat up and when we're getting into June, July, August, he kind of he's more of a strong finish type guy. But obviously going out there and having I think it was like a 1.8 whip and 14 hits per nine. I mean, that's not who he is. And obviously, especially with some of the key bullpen guys out and they're kind of mixing and matching some guys right now with some other guys hurt. Yeah, it's a situation where he needs to start working deeper into games.
As they've continued to kind of struggle to get things started, I have tried just for my own sanity to look at silver linings from each game. And I know that some people are frustrated by that. But yesterday I was looking at hard hit balls going, well, I mean, a lot of these outs were, had some pop and they just didn't land in the right places.
It was just
baseball. You had some bad baseball luck in this game. And maybe, you know, the ball metaphorically and literally bounces a different way on a different day. Is there something like that you've taken from the beginning of the season? It could be one player. It could be as a whole, their offensive approach. But is there something where you look at it and you see, this is what I'm taking and kind of building off of so far?
I think more recently they've been hitting the ball harder. I think Julio, especially yesterday, and Scott talked about it with Brock and Salk, he's better when he's hitting the ball in the air. And we saw him hit a lot of balls on the ground, and he's so fast that he can get on base. But Julio's job isn't really to just get on first base. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can steal a bag and get to second, but Julio's also someone that they want to hit the ball in the air, hit the ball out of the ballpark. He has one extra base hit this year, and that was his first at-bat of the year. So it's not just like, hey, he hasn't hit the big home run yet, right? We're all waiting for that to happen, but he hasn't hit an extra base hit since his first at-bat of opening day. So seeing him hit the ball harder yesterday, nothing to show for it, 0-for-4 day in the box score, but I think he had two balls hit over 105 miles an hour. Like, those are good signs. It shows your timing's down. It shows that you're seeing the ball well. So that's something that I think that ultimately, if he can kind of keep doing that and stick to this new little approach that sounds like he kind of tweaked things a little bit, like, then he's going to be in pretty good shape, and obviously that benefits everybody in that lineup.
I got a random one for you, BG.
Okay.
I like an underdog, right? When I was in college, my roommate had a bunch of puppies, and I picked the smallest one. Like, I want the smallest one. Everyone's going to go for the big dog, right? And then I just got me a little mini doodle, you know, a little Callie. She's cute. I can't help but root for Alejandro Kirk, man, just because he's the smallest guy out there.
And the roundest.
And the roundest. Yeah,
it's like if you shrunk Charles Barkley.
Exactly.
Right?
It says he's 5'8". My man is not 5'8".
He's 5'6", probably.
Exactly. Who's your one guy where you're like, you know what? It might not be a popular player. People might not know him, but this is my dude.
Oh, man. I mean, current baseball. I mean, one of my kind of underrated guys, we actually saw him, was Nick Pivetta with the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. I think that just stuff-wise, it's like good, not great, but he's a good pitcher. I mean, and then going back farther, I mean, guys like Wade LeBlanc, right? Just soft tossing lefty in the mid 80s. And I remember watching a game that was nationally broadcast on Fox. And I think he threw 8 scoreless against the Red Sox, one hitter. And I was just like, dude, good for you, man. especially in an era where we're so worried and fixated on velocity and things like that. Seeing the soft tossing guys go out there and just carve up lineups is always so fun.
Thank you for entertaining my question.
It was a funny question. I was really wondering where you were going to go with it, but I also like that Alejandro Kirk is yours.
He's my guy.
I love it. I like him. He's great when he's not playing well against Seattle. Unfortunately, had a single yesterday. Speaking of kind of looking forward to facing Kirk, facing the rest of this lineup, Toronto's been kind of a hot and cold team themselves, hotter at times than Seattle offensively, but they've been up and down. Where are the opportunities here for the Mariners in this series?
Yeah, I mean, today, like I said, kind of at the start, Bassett's going to be in and around the zone, right? And he's not super overpowering. He's going to be, he's going to try and work the corners a little bit. If they can do a good job laying off those close pitches, get him in the middle of the plate. I mean, obviously that's easier said than done with any big league pitcher, but that's where we're going to see them have some success. I thought the other day in Milwaukee where they did hit the ball out of the ballpark late, but they were just stringing hits together over and over and over again. Just seeing a bunch of guys find singles into the grass, like that's going to be a big sign, just quality of at bat. One of the things with a guy like Bassett, though, is because he's in and around the zone, that does tend to make guys want to jump out early. Yeah. And that's also a situation where then it's the fifth inning and he's throwing like 45 pitches. So it's a tough balancing act, you know? So it's like, hey, if the pitch is there, you know, you got to go for it. But also you do have to kind of work around the edges a little bit and see how that goes.
I think there's a lot of places you can go with this one. But what's been the most surprising out of the Mariners this year? What surprise? I mean, obviously we thought the arm's going to be good and maybe cut down on the strikeouts, but that hasn't been the case. What surprised you the most?
Yeah, in a good way, France starting off as he has. I mean, and it's not just the bat to ball with Ty's always been phenomenal, right? He even said that sometimes that was to his own detriment because he was making contact on pitches he had no right to, but he's hitting the ball a lot harder. That's a good sign. I mean, he was a guy that for as big as he is, he didn't hit the ball particularly hard in years past. So that's a good sign. On the other side, it's changed a little bit the last few days, but Polanco being a guy that was about a league average strikeout guy, maybe even better than average. And he had at bats where it just looked like he had no idea what was coming his way. And he was striking out 3-4 pitches. That was kind of the one where I was like, ooh, you know, I thought Garver, just the results haven't been there, but I feel like he's seeing the ball well and the quality of at bats has at least been good. Polanco at the beginning wasn't really like that. That's changed a little bit. I think he's seen the ball a little bit better the last few days.
I'm so confused, says the 253. Does BG stand for Brandon Gustafson or baseball guy? I like the baseball guy idea with it. All right. He is kind enough to join us for the dugout to take a look at this team heading into the rest of the series. Thanks, BG.
Thanks,
we appreciate it. All right. You guys don't go anywhere. Aaron Goldsmith joining us at 1:30, Mariners assistant pitching coach Danny Farquhar joining us at 1:45, taking a look around MLB next.
You're listening to The Dugout, every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
All baseball from 1 to 2. Aaron Goldsmith joining us at 1:30, Mariners assistant pitching coach and pitching strategist Danny Farquhar joining us at 1:45. Before we get to it, taking a look around the rest of MLB. We've got this season's first pair of Torn Fanatics pants. Congratulations to Tigers outfielder Riley Green. Saw his pants disintegrate while sliding home in Detroit's game against the Pirates earlier today.
That can't be good for advertisement. Just one little slide. That thing ripped open violently.
And I'm talking ripped.
Fix
like
this.
Hip
like
to the ankle.
No, listen. Like Adidas, how they had the button-up side
pants.
The breakaway pants. They ripped like breakaway pants.
Could you imagine if they were still wearing the old-school jock straps, how embarrassing that would be for my man?
When you sent me that video, Curtis, I wasn't sure which way it ripped and where it ripped, and I was thinking, oh, no, the first time. Now, thankfully, nothing like... It's not mortifying for him.
He has some leggings on underneath them, so he's good.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's
not a good look.
Not a good look for Fanatics. So congratulations, Riley, for being this year's
maybe
first.
This will spur on some change with the uniform.
I don't
right?
think so. You would think that being able to see people's undergarments would have spurred that change, but I guess
you think
not.
That using mosquito netting wouldn't be the best material for pants.
So like it's summertime, guys. It'll be light and breezy. Angels owner Artie Moreno was booed so loudly during the hype montage that played at Angel Stadium on opening day that he was edited out of the video during LA's second home game.
Dang, that's all bad.
Now, I get why. However, in my horrible owner's rankings, he is not at the top.
No, he's not at the top. But
it's got to be close, right?
It's close.
You know what? You have to go home and just sit down with a bottle of whiskey some days. Like, they hate me that much.
But then you realize your whiskey is worth a ton of money because you're a billionaire and you don't care.
It doesn't even taste like whiskey. It tastes like water. It's so good.
There are just certain people where, like, it's okay to not care. So can I just say this? I post a comment that I saw earlier bothered me. I am not a billionaire or millionaire who's like, my life is so perfect I cannot let it bother me. It's okay if something someone says, and I'm saying this to like you listening, bothers you. For Moreno, listen, don't get your feelings hurt. You have so much money. There is a certain level that you reach where it is now fair for people to say, why do you care?
Yeah.
Truly.
He's probably at that point.
Well, and I mean, like... He had two generational players on his roster at the same time, couldn't win.
And did nothing. and generational. It's weird thinking the word generational doesn't do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on your roster at the same never. Next up, speaking of the Angels, Mike Trout continues to do it all by himself. He needs to. And his last 10, his last 10 home runs have all been solo shots. According to Bob Nightingale, 235 of Trout's 373 career home runs, which is almost two-thirds, have been solo home runs. Only one player in MLB history has more than 60% of home runs solo home runs. That's Alfonso Soriano. Who had about 60%.
That's very lonely.
Put the team on his back.
Mm-hmm. Hitting all these bombs. He said, if y'all would just get on, we'd be all right. But you're not getting on. Trout, just continue to be great, man.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching a middle linebacker hit dingers the way you do.
He looks like Brian Urlacher.
Truly.
Yes. His neck.
Truly does. No, I enjoy watching a middle linebacker hit dingers.
I feel bad about Trout now because, like, remember that tweet that would always go around if Ohtani and Trout did something together?
Yes.
It was like, for the first time since 1896 in an Angels 10-4 loss. now it's just Trout all by himself doing this.
Yeah.
Like, no one else can help him make history.
Yeah, it's Ohtani is now he has all the support in the world around him. He's got the best lineup, best roster, best everything in baseball. But the flip side of that coin is that if you don't win a World Series, you are disappointed. If the Dodgers do not win a World Series, the season was a failure and a disappointment.
Yeah. It's a good place to be.
It's a good place to be, but it still has to do it. I would love to be in that place. Do not get me wrong. I would so much rather be there, but it's...
We're trying to make the offs over here, man.
I know. If the Mariners make the playoffs, the season would be a success. And I would like to be where the Dodgers are, where not making a World Series is a failure, but like... It still comes with its own set of challenges
a
very different way. Next up, Astros ace Framber Valdez became the latest starting pitcher scratched from a start due to elbow soreness. What a weird start to the season when it comes to pitchers. Not good news. He first experienced discomfort on Sunday while playing catch, and was sent back to Houston separate from the team for further evaluation. He's received Cy Young votes in each of his last two seasons. Now, if you want to feel bad for the Astros, don't, because Ronel Blanco nearly became the second pitcher ever in MLB history to throw back-to-back no-hitters.
I saw that. I jinxed him. You're welcome.
I did that for you guys.
Let's talk to the baseball nerds over here on the other side of the glass.
Hi, nerds.
Wow, dude.
Nerd's a good thing. I tell my son all the time, man, being a nerd ain't bad, dog. Go ahead and do that. But do you think they're really going to tell their pitchers, yeah, don't throw as hard? I mean, you have to. There's no way around this. This is just the way baseball's going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. It's confirmation. It's my confirmation code, Bones and Curtis.
For the third straight year, Red Sox shortstop Trevor Story has suffered a season-ending injury. He'll miss the rest of 2024 after suffering a fractured shoulder, expected to have surgery on that today. Since signing with Boston before the 2022 season, he's played only 145 of a possible 486 games. In hindsight, did the Mariners dodge a bullet by not signing him?
They might have. It seems like they did. He did get some Cy Young votes, though, you know? No, I don't think so. I think you get talent as much as you can, and if they get hurt, you just deal with it.
I think that there are... This is where I feel as a Mariners fan. There are a few guys that have been signed by other teams that haven't taken off the way that everyone thought they would, whether it was...
Chris Bryant's
there. Yeah, yeah. A few other guys where you're like, okay, maybe he wouldn't have been like a game changer here. But that also... I wouldn't want it to take any pressure off the Mariners to continue to improve and be aggressive when they feel someone can truly help them, because you also aren't pointing to moments when you didn't sign guys or when you moved on from guys that went on to succeed elsewhere. You know what I mean? Like, it breaks both ways. So if you're Jerry DePoto, you're going, see, aren't you happy I didn't do this? I did the right thing. But if you're the Mariners fans, you're pointing at the roster going, well, I don't know, maybe next year you continue to kind of stay aggressive. Like, Luis Castillo isn't playing his best baseball. I like that was an aggressive move. I appreciated that was an aggressive move that the Mariners made. Robbie Ray was an aggressive move. He's not here anymore. You traded him. But I appreciated that.
And who's to say that if they came over here, they would get hurt. Maybe they don't get hurt. Maybe the routine is different. Maybe the marine layer helps. I don't know. You just can't say because he got hurt there, he's going to get hurt here. It's worth the risk when you're dealing with talent, and you can never prevent injuries that are going to happen. That's the one thing I don't like about that comparison is, like, you don't know what he would have done here.
Yeah.
As far as injuries.
All right, next up, Red Star Ellie De La Cruz had a very unique multi-home run game on Monday night. His first of the night went 450 feet.
Payoff is crushed. Deep center. Off the top of the batter's eye.
His second didn't even leave the park. It was an inside-the-park home run.
First pitch, center field. Frelick was deep. Coming on. He slides. It gets by. De La Cruz can fly. He storms to second. Churio gathers. Edge of the track. Windmill is on. Relay to the plate. De La Cruz. Save!
He can hit all kinds of home runs.
Man, watching that young man fly across, around the bases is
so much
fun to watch. That stride, his first bomb, the way he posed and looked at it. I mean, he's just probably the most entertaining player for me to watch right now is that young man do his thing. It's fun.
Yeah, truly. By the way, I didn't have this in MLB headlines, but did you guys watch the Padres and Cubs game the other day? Catch any point of that? Padres and Cubs, right? That's what I'm thinking of. I know it was the Cubbies. It was an 8-0 lead. 7 runs scored for the Padres in the 7th, 8th?
It was late, yes.
Pretty late in the game. And then they obviously end up going on to win that game. So
yeah, that was 7 runs in the 6th and then 2 in the 8th.
So look, this is not the silver lining that I'm adding to the Mariners, who I would love to see get a series win, but it could have been worse. You could have been Chicago.
I think the Mariners last year got off to a big lead against the Cubs in a game, and it disintegrated pretty quickly on them. Those kinds of games are always just the worst.
All right, coming up at 1:45, Mariners assistant pitching coach Danny Farquhar is going to join us. We're, of course, going to ask him about Luis Castillo's start to the season, but then all the great pieces he has to work with this pitching staff before we get to that, though. Aaron Goldsmith joining us next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Dugout, every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it's Aaron Goldsmith. Goldie, how's it going?
Welcome to Toronto. How are you guys?
Are you saying that because Curtis said I failed French? He's spreading lies and misinformation about me.
Can I tell you something?
Yes. Did you fail French too?
I heard that today is Curtis's birthday.
It is.
Wow. Can I tell you top 3 things that annoy me more than anything?
Is Curtis one of them?
Adults who want to celebrate their birthday.
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't pick this day.
And I can only imagine that Curtis walked in today. It's my birthday. Hey, guys. You know, birthday boy right here. You know, he's got his big old goblet. Okay. I'm drinking whatever it is in there.
Right.
You know, slams that down the counter. You can hear the clang all the way in production studio. So I just know what it's been like over there, guys, and I'm sorry.
We appreciate that, Goldie.
Aaron, you're not invited to my birthday party this year. I'm just going to say that now.
Wow. Now, Bump, do you really throw yourself a birthday party?
No, I don't. I sit on the couch, drink some whiskey, go outside, smoke a cigar.
See, now that's perfectly acceptable.
Goldie, I'm going to get started talking about Luis Castillo. It was an interesting start to the season for him because there's been some stuff that you do like. I mean, he was ahead in the count for a few of these at-bats yesterday. He just couldn't put it away. What are you seeing in terms of any kind of consistent pattern in what we've seen from him this year?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. He threw a first pitch strike to the first 8 batters in the ball game yesterday. For me, this has been the case of a guy with good stuff who has been very hittable. You know, Oral Hershiser, I heard him say many, many, many years ago, this great baseballism, and I'm going to try to get it right. It's a little complicated. It was along the lines of, I've never heard a pitcher say, I had great command today and I got hit around. But many times a pitcher has said, I had great stuff today and I got hit around. You can have great stuff and give up hits. And that's exactly what we have seen from Luis Castillo. I mean, the majority of the knocks that he gave up last night, some of them drove in runs, were right over the plate. Almost center cut to guys that you just can't do that to, right? Bo Bichette, Vlad Jr. This Blue Jays team has underwhelmed, actually, offensively, dating back to last year. But one thing you cannot do is you can't throw them a mistake. They will crush mistakes. We've seen that when the Mariners are here. We've seen it on highlights. They're too good of hitters to miss mistakes all that often. So, you know, I asked Scott Service yesterday, what do you do as a pitcher if you have great stuff and you aren't locating? And it sounds like a lot of that is dependent on the catcher and where they are asking for the ball. And I think it's not that something that Cal and Zebby Zavala can do on their own, but they recognize it, and it's changing your sights, changing your target, whether that's aiming higher up, aiming further off the plate, because sometimes it's hard for us, like normal mortal people, to relate to this, but the ball moves, and the ball moves in ways that they can't always control, and sometimes your greatest strength becomes an actual liability, and I feel like that's what we're seeing from Castillo so far, because the ball's moving, it's got great velocity, he's healthy, he's not hurt, it's just moved in places where he doesn't want it, and unfortunately it's been his first three starts of the year, which makes it kind of more magnified than normal, right?
We spent a lot of time just listening and dissecting pitchers and what they're doing. And the pitchers are saying, at least Verlander said, like, you can't rely on soft contact anymore, right? You got to try to strike these dudes out. What does that say about the bats? We've talked about the pitcher's angle in this whole thing. What does that say about the bats in MLB right now?
Well, you know, I think I heard Verlander's little impromptu presser with that, and I thought a lot of it was interesting, and he's certainly a guy that has a lot of credibility to talk about that. I think some of that goes back to 2019 when the ball was juiced, right, and you would throw a pitch half a baseball off the plate and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa would hit an opposite field home run, right? I think that has calmed. I mean, I know it has. I've watched it with my very eyes. It's not to that level. But yes, home runs continue to go on the rise, it seems like, almost every year. A lot of that, I think, is guys selling out for power. And I think some of it, too, is you have pitchers who will sacrifice command for stuff. Now, we just talked about that with Luis. I think this is a different scenario. But when you sacrifice command for stuff, what ends up happening? You miss over the plate. And as every hitter has ever said, and the most notable guy that I recently heard was Aaron Judge when he was in his home run chase. He said, home runs are thrown, they're not hit. It's really hard to hit a home run, even today, if it's outside of that box you see on the screen, and if it's on the edges of that box you see on the screen. It can happen, right? Like Dom Canzone hit an oppo bomb at T-Mobile Park on a pitch in the upper outside corner. He's got crazy pop. It can't happen. But when you sacrifice command for stuff, you will miss more often. That means you will miss more often over the plate, and that means you get home runs. You know, Verlander has given up a lot of home runs in some years, and part of that is because he's just like, I'm Justin Verlander, and I'm coming right at you, and I'm going to pump in my best fastball, and if it happens to be over the plate and you're ready for it, you know, that can result in home runs. That's been like the single bugaboo for Verlander, it seems like, in recent years.
Ty France, 3-for-4 yesterday in his first game back from being on the paternity list. Congratulations to Ty and Maggie. And a good start to the season for him so far. He's been kind of a silver lining for them. Jerry DePoto pointing to him as well. What have you made of his start? What have you seen from him at the plate?
It's been really great to see. I think anytime you have a really challenging season like Ty France had last year, and you go to the lab and you revamp everything, if you don't get off to just a modest start, right? If you get off to a bad start, like, what's human nature? Oh, no, this isn't working. Like, I got to go back to what I was doing, which wasn't working, but it's comfortable. So that's what I'll do. Now, I'm sure if Ty dissected every at-bat that he's had so far this year, he's had swings where he has gone back to the old Ty France, because it must be really hard to stop doing something that you have done for your whole career, probably going back to college, right? But he has made a lot of changes. He has stuck with it, and it has resulted in hits, which has been great to see. Tonight, by the way, he's batting cleanup for the Mariners tonight. Be interested to hear Scott talk about that a little bit. But he's been one of the bright spots offensively for the M's. There's no question.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch him go to work. I'm still waiting on Julio, and I obviously – we all agree that Julio's going to find it and get it all together. What are you seeing at his at-bats, his approach? Is there anything you would tweak, or do you think it's just a matter of reps and time?
All right, let's talk. Can we nerd out for just a minute?
Please.
Okay. We sure can.
Now, some people knock hard hit rate, okay, and that's because they don't understand hard hit rate. When you hit the ball at 95 miles an hour or better off the bat, which is a hard hit ball, year after year, and I mean year after year, you know what the league hits on hard hit balls? 500.
Wow.
500. Hard contact, more times than not, results in a base hit. Last night, guys, Julio had the fifth hardest hit ball of his career. It was about 115. That was in the first inning. He flew out to center field. That was the hardest hit ball of the game. Julio had two of the three hardest hit balls of the game. Julio had three of the nine hardest hit balls of the game last night. Anybody want to guess how many hits Julio had?
None.
A big goose egg. A big goose egg. His softest hit ball last night was 104 and change. Last year, the league hit 700 on balls at that rate. I mean, it's really hard to goose three balls in the air at 104 plus and come up hitless. That's what happened to Julio. That's like the ultimate bad luck day. To me, the huge positive. Honestly, I would rather see Julio. Now, he might disagree with this, and maybe Scott would disagree with this, too. I don't know. I would have rather seen Julio take an over with three hard-hit balls airborne than see him go 2-for-4 with two balls on the ground, because Julio's had a tendency over the years to hit the ball on the ground quite a bit, and we know this. When Julio is an MVP candidate, when he is his biggest impact on the field, what's he doing? Getting the ball in the air. And that needs to come. And to me, I'm no hitting expert, but what last night showed me is that his timing is really beginning to come around for him to be able to do that. Not pop flies, like rockets at times. Kevin Kiermaier's won a platinum glove. The ball that Julio hit in the first inning, Kiermaier caught with two hands. Like, I don't know the last time I've seen Kevin Kiermaier catch a fly ball two-handed, but it was because it was a missile to center field, and he was afraid he wouldn't be able to hold on to it. So I think things are beginning to turn for Julio based on some good swings in Milwaukee, but in particular what I saw last night.
He is Aaron Goldsmith, kind enough to join us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Goldie, before we let you go, in 30 seconds, settle this debate for us. Are cinnamon rolls the best pastry?
Definitively.
Okay, wow. That's all wow. For Goldie. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time. That. So sorry.
Anybody want to throw some cream cheese frosting on that? You want to take this to an ultimate all-star level?
I just think donuts are so obvious an answer that I'm shocked no one's saying it.
I really understand this is a technicality. I just don't think of a donut as a pastry. It's like its own category.
Then I'll throw in almond croissants, which these two did not agree with me on.
Okay. I knew Stacey was bougie, but now it's like, just come on.
Thank you.
Like, come on,
sorry,
man.
Sorry, we don't have come more on. Time, Aaron. Yeah. We got to let you go.
I didn't know it was Stacey's birthday, too. Jeez.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Goldie. Good talking to you. We'll see you later.
Great talking to you guys. Happy birthday, Curtis. I love you, brother.
Thanks, Aaron.
Mariners assistant pitching coach and pitching strategist Danny Farquhar joining us next. Don't go anywhere. This is The Dugout.
You're listening to The Dugout every Tuesday at 1 with Bump and Stacy on Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners.
Farquhar, pitching strategist and assistant pitching coach with the Mariners. And Danny, some people do know plenty about this, but I am curious, what exactly does being a pitching strategist entail?
I think it's just a fun title they gave me. But I'm kind of like involved in a lot of different aspects. Making sure our guys aren't pitch dipping, making sure, communicating with the guys, seeing how they're feeling, just having that playing experience, that perspective, slightly different. They're just using me in all different avenues, but it's a fun title.
Danny, it's always nice when they make up a title for you, man. That means you're valued. Man.
It sounds really cool.
They want you out there, man. That's cool. When you're coming up with, I guess, not a strategy, but when you are critiquing and talking to each player, is there like a common theme that you lean on, or how individual are those conversations?
Very individual. I mean, it just depends on what kind of pitches the guys are throwing, what their plan of attack is. But I mean, one thing that like is like vital for us is you know, strike throwing. Like it's the messaging that the Mariners do with that is incredible, and I'm all in on that. You know, and we've been doing a really good job of it. Just, you know, the process is there, just the results just haven't kind of followed suit.
Where do, if at any point catchers, like where does Cal, if he ever does, overlap with what you do?
Oh yeah. We're, you know, Cal and Sebi are in constant communication with the pitching department. You know, it's very involved, you know, and it's one thing that like we're all one big group, you know, all working together.
You're still a young man, and I coach as well, not on your level, obviously, but I coach football, and every now and then I got to get out there and show these dudes what's up. You ever just grab the rock and say, "Hold on, let me show you a little something"?
Every day I play catch with the guys. I definitely don't have it like I used to, but I can still, like, you know, spin the ball and make it do different things. And, but, you know, it's fun playing catch with the guys. Sometimes my shoulder hurts a little bit, you know, throwing for with three different guys each day. But it's a lot of fun, you know, to be out there and being on the field with the guys. And it's just a lot of fun.
I'm with you, man. When I'm a receivers coach, so I throw a football a lot, and my elbow starts to hurt a little bit after I throw about 50, 60 of those things. I see pitchers sometimes warming up throwing a football. What's the angle behind that?
So obviously you can't throw it as fast as a baseball. So it's a nice like warm up tool. Also, like, you know, the arm pass with the football, you got to be short. So it kind of like it shortens your arm pass a little bit, gets you on time. And then at the end of the day, it's fun messing around with the football.
Hey, curious as to what you've seen from Luis Castillo to start the season and what your conversations are like with him. He's had he's obviously 0-3, but each has kind of brought its own unique positive and challenge. Like, it's been a really interesting start. Last night, for instance, he was ahead in the count for a couple of these big plays, and then Toronto just kind of got the better of him. It was such a weird outing. Can you tell me what you're seeing from him so far?
Yeah, honestly, it was just like a couple pitches here, a couple pitches there, and it was in kind of those kill counts that you talked about, that they just weren't, you know, in the optimal location, and the hitters, you know, they're still really, really good hitters, and when you miss your spots, you know, and they capitalized last night and in those big situations.
I was excited to see Emerson Hancock. Obviously, he didn't have the outing that he wanted to last time, but I think a failure is good. I mean, it might not be good for the team, right, or for us, because we got to sit and talk about it. But as the athlete goes through it, he's going to learn from these failures. How has Emerson grown so far this year?
Big time. He's kind of, you know, understanding, you know, his role and getting himself into a good routine, you know, watching him from spring training to, you know, to two starts in the big leagues. It just seems like he's very in tune with a plan, with what he wants to do. And, you know, his plan the other day, you know, was really good. He was executing all of his pitches down. You know, obviously he's a sinker slider guy. Maybe just a few more like four seams and cutters up, you know, something to adjust. But his plan and his work ethic are pretty incredible.
Pitchers seem like creatures of habit. Like, I know that they don't interview on days that they're going to start. They're just always, like, without fail, maybe some of the most superstitious guys on a squad. What's it like trying to correct anything they do or give them suggestions for new things?
I mean, for me,
I was going to say, as you know.
It's one of those. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that I did it. So, you know, and not everything works for everybody, but just having just a different opinion and people openly communicating with them, and they can pick and choose the things that they like, the things that they don't. But just having that information, you know, available to them, and they can make those little adjustments.
Danny, you are young enough and old enough to see the game change a bit. And the topic as of late is just how pitchers are relying on breaking balls more, and the fastball is becoming that secondary type of pitch. Has that changed the way that you you coach these guys? And how do you think that's changed the game in general, just the approach that these pitchers have now on the mound?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that, like, you know, the off-speed pitches are the toughest pitches to hit. They're moving, they're fast. you know, pitchers are able to locate them. So if your best pitch is a slider, you should throw your slider, you know, a few more times. You know, old school baseball, you relied on your fastball and you pitched off your fastball. And honestly, I never saw it that way. I always thought that you should throw your best pitch, you know, as much as possible, you know, and you have to throw fastball to keep the hitters off balance. You can't just throw, you know, 20 curveballs in a row. Maybe some people can throw 20 curveballs in a row. I couldn't. But I'm on board with, you know, using your best pitch more often, whatever your best pitch is. Some guys, it is the fastball. I'm not sure of Hader's fastball percentage, but I remember it was like 80%. You know, so he's, you know, using his best pitch more often. And that's where I stand on that.
Hey, who's maybe the most intense guy you work with, and which of the guys is surprisingly laid back as far as just the starters go?
I mean, they're all like, I would say, intense on their start day, intense on their side day, like very focused. I don't know if intense is the right word, but they're very focused, very, you know, they have a plan. They're going to execute their plan. And then on their non-start days, on their non-side days, very friendly. I mean, not one of them stands out more than the other. They're all pretty, you know, in tune.
Baseball, I mean, your travel schedule is crazy. And I played in the NFL and the CFL. The NFL cities weren't too bad. CFL, I came across just some places that I just stayed in the hotel and didn't really care to see the city. What's your favorite place to visit outside of Seattle? I won't ask for the worst. We're not gonna blast the city.
I want to know the worst, though. Can you give us a hint?
My favorite, I would have to say, is Tampa. You know, I spent a couple of years playing with the Rays, and then, you know, you got the beach there. My family lives, you know, about an hour away in Gainesville, hour and a half away. And, you know, they always come to visit. I spent a lot of time in spring training with the Blue Jays there. I spent time with the Yankees in spring training there. It's just like, you know, I grew up in South Florida. Like, that's probably my favorite place to go back and visit. And, you know, the Trop gets a bad rap, and I actually enjoy the Trop. I don't know why, you know, so many people don't like it. I'm sure it can be, you know, upgraded, but I enjoy it. I don't think there is a bad big league city, to be honest with you. They're all pretty incredible, but Tampa is definitely my favorite.
Danny, I would have loved it if you just automatically were like, you know, I don't like Cleveland, or like just out of nowhere. But I agree with you. It's especially some of the old, even the older cities. It's like the parks are historical.
I don't
historical,
like Cleveland.
So it's,
been in Cleveland. Didn't
you
like
don't know.
It.
Cleveland could be nice. I've heard good things about the mall.
Okay.
Danny, my last question for you is actually a bigger question happening around baseball. We heard Justin Verlander talking about pitcher injuries and the increase in that, and whether he thinks the pitch clock is behind it, which is what Tony Clark of MLBPA was saying. And we have, of course, the league that says, no, not at all. My question's less about like what you think, you know, whether you think the pitch clock is solely behind it, and just what you think about the uptick in pitcher injuries, especially since it's such a big topic of conversation to begin the season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this topic comes up every year. You know, after COVID, it was, you know, the workload being, you know, so down. So you have to be cautious with the pitchers. And it just seems like a topic every year. For me, it's the training has just gotten to the next level and making guys just completely efficient. And so velocities are extremely high. Like, you know, 10 years ago, you didn't see velocities, you know, every pitcher on every staff. Not want to say every pitcher, but, you know, 75% of your staff is 95 plus now. And, you know, with the gain velocity, like, injuries are going to happen. It's just the way kind of the game is shifting. It's more of like max effort, you know, get the max effort 90, 100 pitches, you know, out of your starter. Where, you know, before it was, you know, you want your starter, you know, 120, 130 pitches, you know, without it just being so max effort. And, so I think it's my personal opinion. I have no science to back it up, but I think it's the training has just become so optimal And it just, the bodies just aren't holding up. But I don't have any numbers to back anything up.
Yeah, it's the evolution of the game and the body. It's almost like we're advancing too fast for our body sometimes. But I guess that's what being great athletes do, man. So obviously you guys have struggled a bit this year. What's the message like in the clubhouse? I would assume, you know, we freak out. It's our job to respond and react to what we're seeing. You guys realize that there's a long season ahead of you. Just what's the vibe of the team and what are expectations?
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you said. It's a long season. We are, you know, it's April 9th, and, you know, we're 11 games into the season. I just think for me, like, the process, I'm on the pitching side, so I'm going to speak on the pitching side. The process of the pitchers is excellent. You know, their ability to get ahead, their ability, you know, to command the baseball. You know, obviously there's little things here and there, but I think the process is there. I just think we just need to keep moving forward and, you know, things will even themselves out.
All right. He is pitching strategist and assistant pitching coach Danny Farquhar, kind enough to join us for the dugout. Danny, thanks so much, man. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you. I appreciate this.
See ya. All right, you guys, this has been The Dugout on a Tuesday for Bump and Stacey. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.